the optimality of the phasing optimal cluster, how do you guys should take a look at it and derive its data set by itself? And during this lecture, you're going to compare what are the approximations made by each network, what are the differences. So let's first do a little bit of the review. So the definition of the classification task, so given a feature vector, need to open X. So remember, in our lecture, we're always going to use Focal vectors to denote a column vector. Not describe or represent an object that belongs to one of the state classes from the state perspective. That means this class A consists of 1, 2, up to 50 elements. Which means that the cardinality of this set. That means the number of elements in the set is equal to the pixel. So those are those mathematical equations. So those predict which class the object belongs to. We also have a definition of the class diagram. So given a set of examples, B, where begin is a number of examples, and we use branches. Script to index the ith example transit, where xi is a vector, y is one class label, and the goal is to learn this cluster from the domain Rn to the output domain to class set that I can predict the class label of a given element. And so the definition of classification error is based on the indicator function. So given a data set, given a training set D and a function F, the classification error rate of this classifier on the data set is denoted by error F and D. So if we view this as a function, this function takes a training classifier as zero as a data set. And produce a number. So it is the 1 over n, the sum from I is equal to 1 to n, the indicator function of y I is not equal to fxi. So what is fxi? That's the prediction for the ith example. Yi, wrong truth for the ith example. If this event is true, which means that we incorrectly predict the ith example. Therefore, we add the number of this class of examples by 1 because this indicator function will return you 1. And the whole sum simply counts the number of this class of examples in this two sets divided by n. That's error rate. And the Bayes optimal classifier uses the classification function f b of x, which is equal to the argmax. Argmax returns the input argument that contains the maximum value, right? It returns little c in the class set. Little c that achieves the maximum residual for given p of y is equal to little c given the feature of x. And according to the Bayes rule, we have this is equal to y is equal to c comma x divided by p of b over x. And for the numerator, we can further expand according to the chain rule of v, right? I is p of b over x given y is equal to little c divided times p of y is equal to c divided by p of b over x. And from this to this, we get rid of the denominator p of x. My p of x is independent of the class label. It's just a constant. And if we draw the constant, the argmax will still be the same. So the input, the max value, the maximum value for sure will change because we get rid of the p of x. But the input argument, that marketing matrix. It's going to stay the same. Which means that this is a equation with no approximation. That's an equation. And again, we can apply a strictly monotonic function to it. And R mass will stay the same as well. And here, so the EDR based on the same rule is for posteriority. This is for joint magnitude. This is for the sum of lower magnitudes. Or so it is the same. It's the same. And the Bayes optimal classifier, it is the best probabilistic classifier among all possible classifiers. And we have a formal elegant mathematical proof of it. And however, it's not useful due to the difficulty of estimating this class condition. So first of all, this class condition is a high dimensional probability distribution, right? So x lives in the n dimensional space. Therefore, this is n dimensional probability distribution. And from a data perspective, we're going to allow a model to accurate to sufficiently cover those n dimensional space in order for us to make accurate probability density model. And from the model part, we may need a parametric model with a large number of parameters on all meanings or even tens of meanings. And those parameters are very difficult to estimate. We are not talking about tens of parameters or hundred parameters, but we need parameters in order to have the capacity to fit those complex high dimensional probabilities. So for both, from the data perspective and from model perspective, the high dimensional probability function is very, very difficult to estimate in practice. And that's why the naive Bayes and the linear distribution analysis make approximations to this high dimensional mass function. So let's start digging into naive Bayes. So how to deal with multiple features? And in previous lecture, we are only working with one feature and we use the UTM Gaussian distribution model. So what about multiple features? So the naive Bayes assumption. So the naive Bayes classifier approximates the Bayesian optimal classifier using a simple form of this class condition. So this form will assume that all of the feature dimensions are statistically independent given the value of the coming variable. And this is also known as conditional dependent. Condition on this class label, those two features are independent of each other. By statistical independence, we mean the joint probability can be factorized into the product of marking probabilities, right? So if the two events are independent of each other, so the joint probability should be equal to the product of the marginal probabilities. That's the definition. And here we simply add a variable behind the conditional bar, that's conditional dependent. So in the log domain, we simply accumulate evidence from each feature dimension. It allows us to model each dimension of the feature vector, or each dimension of the population of feature vector with a simple uniform distribution. That means, instead of estimating a n-dimensional probability density function, we break it down peaceful feature value that can take real numbers. So it's beyond what is the real value value. That's why we use Gaussian distribution fish. If we are in this Boolean variable, which means that this one only can contain what two values, we cannot use Gaussian model by doing this for looping. And if those feature value can if the test feature can only take a linked number of categories, 1, 2, up to C, we cannot use Gaussian to model B either. We may use hyperbole, so we might only use power in paper size. And here we have view 2D conditionals. Right, so how to create those joint class conditionals. So for this feature, the first time we fit a Gaussian, and for this feature vector, for this feature we fit a Gaussian, and we multiply them together to create this ellipse shape. So in 2D Gaussian distribution always gonna have this ellipse shape, right? And this is for class 1. For each class, and for each feature dimension, we model a unified Gaussian distribution. Same here, for y is equal to 2, we create a Gaussian distribution, here we create a Gaussian distribution, and we multiply those 1D Gaussian distribution to create the joint mass conditions. Right? And here is my question. So you see, the principal axis of this ellipse is in parallel with coordinate axis. Right? So the principal axis of this ellipse is in parallel. So here this is in parallel with this coordinate axis. This principal axis is in parallel with this coordinate axis. So why is that? So any answers? This is because we treat each dimension independently. We don't model the feature relationship among those features. That's why if you are always gonna expect those vertical lines, it is in my case. And we view the posterior probability pure y is equal to middle segment x. We can compute it using the variable and we compute it. So those dashed black curve is the decision boundary and where this value is equal to 0.5. But we only have two classes, those two should sum up one. And this curve is P of y. And we look at classification still, right? That's a new environment talking school. Now they just write it explicit how we derive this space. So here we have P of X J given Y is equal to C is equal to 1 over square root 2 pi sigma J C squared A cat function delta X minus mu J C squared divided by 2 sigma J C squared. Here, so those subscripts is to indicate that for each class you are going to estimate this standard deviation of those values. And given each class, for each feature dimension you are going to estimate those variables. And here we use this condition mark indicating the class's condition. And this is just a subscript. You can, so those are equivalent terms, right? You can write as J comma C squared. You can even write J sigma J C without comma squared. So those are the same, just to indicate. This sigma is depend on the class label, should depend on the feature dimension, that's it. Alright? And what's this term? This term is equal to 1 over square root is 1 half, right? 2 pi sigma j c squared to the power of 1 half. Square root is to the power of 1 half, right? 1 over some value to the power of 1 half is equal to 2 pi sigma j c squared left to 1 half, right? And if that's the first term, right? If we take log, so the first term becomes this. And this left one half is in front of the log. And inside log we have 2 pi sigma j c squared. That's why there is one negative one half in front. So the left is because the square root is in the denominator. The one half is because of the square root. And for the second term, log x cancels and has inverse of each other, which gives negative xj, xj minus mu j gives jc squared divided by 2 sigma jc squared. So that's the second term. Right? Any question this time? Those are just simple algebraic manipulations, no fix. So the decision boundary consists of a set of points x1, x2 with those positive log likelihood of class 1 is equal to the log likelihood of class 2. So those log likelihoods should be equal to each other. And we simplify this to replace this with this in the previous slide. And then we can combine common terms. So it's not hard to see what the descendant boundary it is a quadratic function of x1, x2 with a form. This. Right? So here let's do a simple example. So those two are independent of x, right? It goes to the constant c, right? So those two are independent of x. So those are close to the constant c. And what are the quadratic terms? Comes from here, right? Well, xj squared. And the linear terms comes from this quadratic expression here as well. That's why the final decision problem has a quadratic shape. And if you have interest, you can figure out the exact expression for A1, A2, B1, B2, and C from this expression. write compactly using one equation to combine those two equations. Symbolic. How to use one equation to combine those two equations. So what is P of xj given y is equal to c? When xj is equal to 1, it becomes this. When xj is equal to 0, it becomes 1 minus y. So any answers? I think that this kind of question is very important to encourage us to think, to treat problems in a holistic way. Think problems in a new way. So that is y phi j c to the power of Taylor function xj is equal to 1 times 1 minus y phi j c to the power of indicator function xj is equal to 0. And if xj is equal to is indeed equal to 1, this event is true, you will return 1. This event is false, you will return 0. Some value to the power of 0 is equal to 1. Some value to the power of 1 is equal to itself. That's y phi j is equal to 0. If xj is equal to 0, and this indicator function will return 0, this indicator function will return 1, and we have 1 minus y phi j is equal to 6. Is that clear? And so there is a subtle issue here. Some features may not be present in any two examples for given class. We smooth NLE. So we add a smooth parameter alpha. Alpha you can view as a virtual count. We add some virtual numbers in the training set. And therefore, the estimation formula becomes this MJC plus alpha. For the JS feature, we add alpha, where alpha virtual examples where x is equal to 1. And we have a total of n feature dimensions, right? For each of feature dimensions, we add alpha, where xj is equal to 1. That's why the numerator is alpha, the denominator is n times alpha. N is for the number of features. And if alpha is equal to 1, this is for Laplace smoothing. And the whole is also known as additive smoothing, because we add some virtual parts for each feature dimension. And in general, better lighting or smoothing the estimate helps to prevent overfitting those triangles. So what if XJ has a finite set of categories? Right? Instead of only two. Here, so the cardinality of this set, the number of elements in it is strictly greater than 2. It's 3-4, but it's greater than 2. Then we can use a multinomial, also known as categorical distribution as class condition, where P of xj is equal to x, a1 is equal to c, is equal to y by xjc. So we have a little heavier mathematical equation because we have three letters in the subscript. But it's necessary because c is for class label, j is for the j feature dimension, and x is the possible value of those features. And they should sum up to 1. And for example, if this cohomography of the set is equal to 4, how many numbers should we estimate? It's 4 minus 1 is equal to 3, right? Because we have 4 of y 5s. Those 4 should sum up to 1, which means that the last parameters can be represented by 1 minus rest by 5. That's 4 minus 1 is equal to 3. And again, how to write this compactly using one formula. Right? What is T of xj given y is equal to c? This is just a generalized formula of what you have previously written down, right? This is equal to the product of E equals C is in the range of this one parameter. And we have Y5, X, J, C to the power of indicator function XJ is equal to minus. And here we're going to use a concrete example to demonstrate this. So let's say XC consists of 1, 2, 3 possible values that this feature can take. And here this becomes Y5, 1, J, C, XJ is equal to 1. Wi-Fi 2, GC, indicator function XJ is equal to 2. Wi-Fi 3, GC, indicator function XJ is equal to 3. If XJ is indeed equal to 1, so this is 1, this is 0, this is 0, and this becomes Wi-Fi 1, GC. Right? XJ is equal to 1, Wi-Fi 1, GC. If xc is indeed equal to 2, this is 0, this is 1, this is 0, we have 1 by 2, gc remains 2, 2. Right? So those are the unified terms to represent. So again, MAE, so how to estimate Wi-Fi XGC? Simple number counting program. It's MXGC, UFMC, where MXGC is the number of trained examples in class C with feature XG is equal to equals. Right? Here we have the whole data set. So this rectangle represents calling graph D. We have a subset with class C. So this is subset with class C. And for each class C, this is where xj is equal to 1, this is where xj is equal to 2, and so on. We simply count them. For example, if x is equal to 2, we simply count the number of examples in this in this subset and divide by the number of examples in class C. That's simple number counting program. All right, any general question regarding naive-Bayes? All right, let's jump to the linear discriminant analysis. So linear discriminant analysis is a classification technique due to Fisher that dates back to 1930s. And Fisher is a very famous, was a very famous statistician back then. And it can be interpreted as a different approximation to the Bayesian optimal classifier for real value Bayesian, which means that we can compare linear discriminant analysis with Gaussian naive Bayes. And instead of a product of independent Gaussians in naive Bayes, so LPA assumes this joint class conditional follows a multivariate Gaussian distribution, with for each class it assumes it estimates a different mean vector, and for across all classes it estimates a common shared covariance matrix. So remember, so this is in Rn, and the mean vector is also in Rn. And the covariance matrix is n by n symmetric matrix. Right. And this is a formula for multivariate Gaussian distribution. P of x given y is equal to c is equal to 1 over 2 pi to the power of n. N is the feature dimension. We have n features. And the sigma, and this is known as the matrix determinant. Matrix determinant takes a matrix as an input and returns a single number during the same part. And it has some volume scaling properties. So it can be viewed as a volume scaling factor of the linear transform described by this particular matrix. And here this is the first term, constant term. And you have x 1 over 2 x minus mu c transpose sigma inverse x minus mu c. So let's work out the dimension. So x n by 1, uc n by 1 transpose 1 by n, sigma n by n, sigma inverse. So this next 1 is matrix inverse. Matrix inverse n by n, this is n by 1. So the sum of these three, the multiplication of three matrices will give you one by one matrix. Just a number, right? Those just a number. This is just a number for a PDQ. Right? Right? the classification function is as follows, where we have the, where we insert this class conditional with this more common problem suite. And here, to contrast IPF and linear discriminant analysis through the lens of multi-level distribution. So we can, for non-UPS, we can also write its joint class condition as a multi-level Gaussian distribution. For each class, in a similar way, it will estimate a separate mean vector. And for each class, it will estimate a covariance vector. That's why we put a subscript C here for this class. However, this covariance matrix has a very special structure for a property. So can you figure out the elements of this covariance matrix of this line phase? So think about it. Any answers? Diagonal, yes, it is a diagonal matrix, which means that on diagonals we have sigma, on diagonal we have sigma 1 c squared, sigma 2 c squared, up to sigma n c squared. All diagonals, they are all zeros. So through the lens of multi-level Gaussian distribution, you can clearly see the difference between IPS and linear discriminant analysis. Right? Linear discriminant analysis estimates the full covariance matrix, but here this full covariance matrix across all classes. But for non-UPS, for each class, it will estimate a separate covariance matrix. But those covariance matrices are diagonal. They don't model the relationship among features. And LDA assume models the relationship between features, but assume the dark features, the relations are identical across all classes. That's why they share the covariance matrix across all classes. Alright, so any questions on the comparison between MD and LDA through the lens of multi-dimensional Gaussian distribution? Shared covariance matrix, right? So how many numbers really estimate your covariance matrix. So remember, the covariance matrix is symmetric, which means that sigma ij is equal to sigma ji. The adjacent tree is equal to ji. Then, how many numbers are remaining in the covariance matrix? Think about it. It's n times n plus 1 divided by 2. Right? So let's just draw this figure. So since it's symmetric, for the first row, we can only estimate this one element. For the second row, we estimate two elements. For the third row, we estimate this n element. For the nth row, we estimate the whole row. Plus 1, plus 2, plus 3, up to plus n. The sum of 1 plus 2 plus n. Right, remember this summation in high school. That's the question we have to do. The question on this side, on the counting of the number of parameters to estimate in base, not in base, and in LK. And you see, this is on the order of, linear event. This is quadratic in and in practice, n is way, way larger than the number of classes. And the number of features is way larger than the number of classes. And by counting the number of parameters placed in, you can get the intuition that LD is much more. It is difficult, it is more difficult to estimate because it has more parameters. Right? Maybe more data to estimate. So as with naive Bayes, your data parameters can be learned with MOE, which reduce to the sample estimate. Right? You have already learned this formula, the class label, and those are the class means. And these are the covariance metrics. Right, we have xj minus mu yj xi, mu minus mu yi is the label corresponding to this example xi. And we convert all this dimension, right? This is n times 1, this is 1 times n, with this code will give you n times n matrix. The sum of n times n matrix give you n times n matrix. And if you want to know the step-by-step derivations to arrive at those formulas, so in I will update the lecture notes to give you a step-by-step MLE derivations of naive as well as LDAs. So you can clearly see how we arrive at those expressions, right? But it is optional. But I have encouraged us to do this kind of exercises. So here, we'll do 2D class conditionals. But as I mentioned before, in 2D, Gaussian is always going to have an ellipse shape. But this time, this ellipse is not aligned with the coordinate axis. It's oriented somehow. But these two shapes, so for each class, they have the identical shapes, identical size, identical orientation. Why is that? Because they share the same covariance matrix. But they have different locations. Because the S for each class, the S and the separate means. The mean method controls the location of this ellipse. And the covariance matrix controls the shape and orientation of this ellipse. Right? And you see the ellipse oriented in this way, which means that this pebble length and the simple way, just two features are positively correlated. So with a larger predominance, we're highly likely to associate with a larger set of weights with a hypoplasia. So if we have a larger prevalence, but with a small set of weights, the probability density is going to be very, very small. Right? That's why in LD, we essentially model the pairwise facial relationships within the off diagonal terms of this virus. All right, let's take a